You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
This is the CRM Archaeology Podcast. It's the show where we pull back the veil of cultural resources management, archaeology, and discuss the issues that everyone is concerned about. Welcome to the podcast. Hello and welcome to the CRM Archaeology Podcast, episode 262 for April 19th, 2023. I'm your host, Chris Webster. On today's show, we talk about how AI and machine learning is and will change the way we write and think about the past and whether or not that's a good idea. So prepare to bow down to your computer overlords because the CRM Archaeology Podcast starts right now. Welcome to the show, everyone. Joining me today is Bill in California.
Happy Easter.
And also Andrew in California.
How's it going, everybody?
And I'm finally back in the United States. I'm in Southern Arizona. We're headed to the Grand Canyon today for the next week. And
wait, what part of Arizona are you in?
I'm in Gila Bend right now, just for the night, because we just came across. And then we're going up to the Grand Canyon this week. And then we're going down for another RVing event just past Tucson in Sonoyta. It's called Sonoyta. Yeah. So down in wine country, apparently, which I'm a little dubious about Arizona wine country, but we'll see.
you should definitely be dubious about the wine country situation there. But I would say that now is an amazing time to go to Sonoyta because all the migratory birds are going to be coming through. And so, like now it's going to be bird sighting paradise. That's a major corridor and you're going to be in a nice place where there's, you know, a lot of flowers and it's probably going to be sunny and nice. And, you know, you'll be able to do all your bird watching that I know you love.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Not all the time. I hardly get any work done. Yeah. So,
well down there, you're going to be like, oh my God, like you're a dog or whatever, looking from side to side, like, oh my God, there's a bird, there's a bird.
I know. Oh, man. All right. Well, we've got a topic today and it's Bill's turn for a topic. So, Bill, I'll just have you explain what we're talking about.
Sure. So folks who have been paying attention, well, if you're in a university, you probably already have been hearing all about this, but folks who've been paying attention to these new AI developments might be noticing that there's a lot of conversation about AI creating articles and creating different writing and stuff. And so as someone who's working at a university, of course, our first few weeks of meetings were consumed with guidance on how to handle things like ChatGPT and these other AI text conglomeration platforms. Like, how do we handle that as an essay? Do we run it through these different other kinds of protocols to check and see whether it's been done by ChatGPT, or like, do we really care? Is it really writing if you've had AI help you build it? So folks who are not aware, I mean, I don't know all of the different coding stuff in the back end, but I guess we've gotten to a point where you can enter in different prompts and parameters into things like ChatGPT, which is a online text generator software, and it'll scrape the internet and it can conjure up something that really mimics a pretty decent entry level archaeology or humanities essay, right? So, if your instructor gives you this open prompt about, give me a thing that connects, structuralism with these different kind of theorists and anthropology's history or whatever, you can type those prompts in there and it'll generate something with 1,000 words or however many hundred words that it's got from just stuff from the internet, right?
When I saw you write this topic up, I was actually writing the show notes for and posting the last episode of the Sierra Mark podcast where we had on Andrew's former student. And I was like, I went into ChatGPT because I've been hearing a lot about it. And one of my coworkers was just telling me she was using it to help write video scripts for the software that we both work with. And I went over there and I said, write up podcast show notes regarding a former student's field school experience in Scotland. And I tell you what, I almost used the paragraph that thing put together because it was way better than anything I could have come up with. It wasn't quite right because it sort of did it as a conversation and not as a descriptive paragraph. So, I didn't end up keeping it, but it was eerie how good it was. Yeah. It was really crazy.
Yeah, I mean, yes. And so the thing, you're exactly right. I mean, you give it the parameters, you tell it what you'd like it to create, and it just creates a pretty decent, the grammar is decent, the content is pretty good, and it's passable, right? And so, the biggest concern in academia is, are students going to be able to crank out essays and hand them in? And like, the reality is, seriously, if you're an overworked instructor and you're giving folks quite generic writing prompts with, you know, a wide universe of responses, yeah, ChatGPT can totally game your thing. It can make someone write out something like, you know, archaeological sites associated with George Washington and their connection to constitutionalism. It can make a pretty good essay if that's the level of what you're doing, right? So So there is a concern there. And, you know, I'm like on the fence about it, right? Because just like you said, it created a pretty good show notes thing. And if I had like a, you know, English 100 assignment and someone cranked one out, like, you know, seriously, my assignment is actually not that difficult if a machine can, you know, easily create it.
Right.
But if we're here in 2023 and people can get passable essays off the internet through a software, in 2043, the thing is going to be way better.
Right. Oh, yeah. Now, here's a question for you. I want to know how these conversations are going at the university, maybe behind, you know, closed doors and with a couple of beers, not formal conversations, because what I want to know is, how do you think you guys are going to pivot on this? And what I mean by that is nobody takes typing classes anymore, right? Like when computers were coming into every house, you know, kids were starting to take typing classes where back in the, you know, the early 80s, the 70s, the 60s, the 50s, it was typically women who were going to be secretaries that were taking typing classes, right? Yeah. People who were typing up stuff in those big typing farms. They were the only ones doing that. And then when computers started becoming more ubiquitous, I remember using Mavis Beacon Teaches Typing back in the 80s.
Exactly. I took typing in middle school. Yeah.
Exactly. Nobody takes typing anymore because kids already know how to type, or they can just do it with their thumbs by the time they get to school and nobody cares as long as you can do the output.
Well, now they take it in like third grade though, Chris. Yeah. Like that's something to get like a third grader, cause they're doing all their work on their laptop, their Chromebook anyway. So
sure.
They take typing when they're like, you know, seven.
But that's my point. We've kind of pivoted that way a little bit to just understanding that, okay, this is a given. You need to know how to do this. It's not optional anymore. And people are going to figure it out, right? It's just one of those things. Well, I mean, back before ChatGPT and AI and things like that, it was also okay for professors to just kind of, I don't want to say phone it in, but to say, hey, write up an essay like this, which tests writing skills, tests your critical thinking skills, tests your researching skills, tests all those sorts of things. But maybe we should pivot back to just taking tests in class. You know what I mean? At the college level, because I mean, that's real.
I think that, I have a couple things to say about all this. Cause I don't know about the, like, my department is on the fence, right? To me, I'm not on the fence. I'm like, okay, so how can I just integrate ChatGPT into my class? Right? Like, how can I get it in there? If they're going to make some kind of rule that says anyone who uses any kind of word processing software is a villain, then all the people who are using Grammarly, all the other people who are using other stuff to screen through their writing that they're creating, they're going to get in trouble, right? And then second of all, like the temptation is just so great that, it's just really hard when you've got all these classes, people are asking you to write all these essays and stuff like that. I can absolutely see how, you know, there would be a lot of folks who just, they want to, you know, phone it in. They want to get something created and get it going. And then the third thing is, as we're going to talk about, this is going to be what they're going to do. If you're doing coding, it's crazy for you to be doing it all by hand when a software can create like 90% of it and you just got to tweak it. And I guarantee you most employers are trying to figure out how can they either use ChatGPT or make something similar, use the code from that to work in their company, right? And what I envision is companies that have been around a long time that have a bunch of digital files that have reports can totally put all those things in there and make a ChatGPT-like code and then have it scrape and create the boilerplate for every project. And so if you're a company and you've already, like we're already doing all this stuff on computers, they've been doing it for 30-something years on computers. They've got digital files of all the text that this company has written. It's all already in their thing. It's not very hard for them to take some form of software to create something that will scrape and make the boilerplate and almost, you know, 80% of what you need for your report.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree. I want to talk more about CRM reports and maybe writing articles and stuff in the next segment, but let's stick to college and grad school and things like that, because that's where this all starts, right? All these students that are coming in that are more tech savvy than people in the past, because that's how it works. You know, the younger generation is always more tech savvy, and they're going to be the ones that are exploiting this and then therefore using that in their CRM careers or their academic careers moving forward. So,
yeah, totally.
Andrew and Doug, I don't know which one you had your hand up first, so who wants to go? Sounds like Andrew.
Just talk for a minute, just because of the whole college thing. I agree with you, Chris, in terms of having tests and that kind of stuff on ground. Again, as I think everyone here knows, I just hate all online teaching. I think it's just awful. I think it's just like, it has nothing to do with reality and nobody learns jack. So in terms of bringing the tests and even if you have to write like an essay in class, like that's cool. And I give people a break in terms of grammar and stuff. If you're under the gun, you know, taking a test live. But on the flip side, the ChatGPT thing, it does bum me out because I do ultimately want my students to learn how to write. You know what I mean? It's not so much about like, oh, my God, you forgot your fourth reference, but you need to know those nuts and bolts of writing. So I don't like having ChatGPT in the university system. I get for later. I get the stuff that we'll talk about later, but I don't like having it in there. And I will say, I think I've gotten some stuff that was done by ChatGPT. And Chris, you're right about how good it is overall. But I will add, like, if it's writing something that you really know about, like, oh, the ancient Maya cenotes, every time I get one of those, it feels like I'm drinking Diet Coke, meaning there's an aftertaste where I'm like, wait, what is this? And it just, feels odd. I think Bill's right that, 20 years from now, they're going to get rid of the aftertaste, dude. But for now, for now, I don't like it.
And here's the thing I was going with the typing earlier, and then we'll get to Doug's comment. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was mentioning we don't necessarily, you know, teach typing in the way that we did before because it's more expected. And along the same lines of, you know, one of the things we've always talked about when anybody ever says, oh, you know, we've had the episode with you, Andrew, just a few months ago, that was, what should I be teaching my kids? And Heather and everybody always says, oh, they need better writing skills. They need better, you know, and they need to be able to write, But I'm like, do they now? Right. They need to be able to put better inputs into the AI and tell it how to write better, because ultimately it's going to be quicker. And that's what's going to be the driving factor in CRM anyway.
Yeah, but in these 20 years, next 20 years or so, they're still going to need to know how to write, and they're still going to need to know all the rules of grammar and logic and all that other stuff to even get the machine
to crank it out.
Yeah, I do think they're going to need to have a command of technical language to make sure that it even works, right? To get rid of that aftertaste like Andrew's talking about.
right.
Bill's totally right, too, about the logic aspect, that like how it flows, like how a human will understand it. I think that's the aftertaste part.
Right. Well, I think the machine learning is going to solve that for itself the more that it gets to learn. Doug, you still have a comment?
Man, I have like a couple of comments. I'm just going to be throwing grenades left and right here. What is like a huge pet peeve about like the whole younger generation is more technically capable? No. The younger generation knows how to swipe because they grew up swiping, and that's it. No. Like all technical stuff, it's actually a really good job by UX designers. And basically, like, everyone thinks like, oh my God, because they can use a smartphone that, you know, several billion dollars has been spent on to make it one of the most usable things out there, that somehow that makes them tech savvy. But like, honestly, no generation, it's all roughly the same. Like, most people know how to push buttons. But like, if you ask them like any of the underlying code or, you know, how it works, guaranteed every generation, you basically have the same number of people who know how the underlying bit of machinery, if we want to call it, or code works. But for the most part, not even close. Like it's a mirage just because they've grown up swiping, and people assume that swiping means you're tech savvy, and it does not.
Let's qualify that then. Let's do these one point at a time, right, Doug? So, and then we'll probably take a break after this. But I guess when I say tech savvy, I mean, you're right. I don't mean they know the back end, because it's like cars. There's very few people that will open the hood of a car these days and know what they're looking at versus 20 years ago, right? That's just, people just expect to know how it is, because designers and engineers are getting way better at making these things more reliable, and you don't have to know as much like that. It's the same thing with apps and computers. If your computer breaks 25 years ago, you'd open it up and figure out what component is bad and buy a new component. Now you just throw it in the trash and buy a new one, right? Like, it's just, that's how it's getting, right? So I totally agree with that. But I feel like the younger generation is always trying to pivot to the new thing, right? They're pivoting to the new thing, which doesn't make them more tech savvy, but it makes them more on the cutting edge of things like ChatGPT, like finding easier ways to do stuff rather than the old way that everybody always does it. They're going to like, I'm going to find a new way to do this and see if it's better. It may not be, but I feel like they're always going in that direction. You know what I mean?
Well, I would say laziness runs well through all generations.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Like honestly, like actually, the only people I know who's using so you guys can't see this because we're on a podcast, but I'm doing air quotes for artificial intelligence. It's machine learning. Everyone who's using the machine learning stuff, it's all ages. And actually, I haven't seen anyone really young using it. It's all been older people I've seen having a blast, and also like people who just get tired of writing emails so that they've just used it to make prompts of like, here, mm-hmm. I want to say an email on this. Please write me something to save me a whole 2 minutes.
I want to give people a chance to comment on what you're about to say. So let's take a break real quick and then we will come back and I'll open with you. All right. Back in a minute.
Hey everybody, Chris Webster here to talk about one of the latest supporters to the Archaeology Podcast Network, The Motley Fool. Now, I've been investing in the stock market through various applications for a few years now, and everybody who's listening to this can benefit from that sort of investment for the long-term financial planning. And also, I know the hosts of these podcasts can benefit because as archaeologists, like none of us get retirement, we all have to kind of fend for ourselves. So investing in the stock market is a good idea, but not everybody can do it. And look, we get it. The market is complicated and confusing, and to many of us, it simply doesn't make sense. In fact, where do you even start? Take all of the guesswork out of it with The Motley Fool Stock Advisor. The Motley Fool has been around for over 25 years and has been spot on in recommending some of the world's most important companies before they hit the big time. I'm talking about Amazon, Tesla, Netflix, Starbucks, all before they exploded in value. With their easy to use and super informative service, Stock Advisor, you could join the ranks before they potentially find the next big thing. After all, their average stock recommendation is up over 400% as of April 10th, 2023. And no need to be intimidated by financial jargon or market complexities. As the name suggests, these guys don't take themselves too seriously. Now, finances, that's a different story. Their friendly and relaxed approach has helped over 700,000 people move closer to financial independence, all while beating the market and having fun. New members can access Stock Advisor for only $89 for their first year, a full $110 off the full list price. Don't sit on the sidelines and think about what could have happened. Visit the link in the show notes of this podcast to start your investing journey today. That's $110 discount off of $199 per year list price. Membership will renew annually at the then current list price. So again, check the link in the show notes of this episode.
Welcome back to the CRM Arc Podcast, episode 262, the all robot edition. And because none of us are real, this is all just a simulation. And we're in the Matrix. We're in the Truman Show. Call it what you will, but this is all fake. But Doug, you were about to have a comment at the end of the last segment. Go ahead.
So I don't know, like I'm gonna be like heavily down on this whole like machine learning stuff, like the whole chatbot and whatnot. I honestly think I've seen so many things and so much hype about it, but I honestly think that anything good out of it is going to be offset easily by all the bad, and it's gonna be a more of a negative, a net negative than anything else. But also like
you could have said that about the internet. Like,
what? I didn't say that about that.
Yeah, he's right.
Yeah, I know. That's, we're still the jury's still out on that, but it might be a net negative there.
Nah.
Where I was going with this is like, so I know people are saying things like, oh, you can write all this code and stuff, but you actually can't. Like, if you try to do it, the one thing it can't do, and this is because of how it's actually designed. Like, amazingly, they actually put out a paper on how they designed everything, how it works. And it's amazing, like, sorry, this is going to be a couple of points. I'll try to make them quick. One is, like, we shouldn't call it AI because it's not AI. It's not artificial intelligence. It's machine learning. And by calling it artificial intelligence, we're making it sound a lot smarter and a lot more magical than it really is. It's why it fails so horribly when it actually writes like essays, because it makes up all the references, and that's by design. Like it can never not do that. Like there's no way it's never not going to be able to make up random references, which is why it usually fails.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing with code. Is you can maybe get it to write like a small function, and then you could string together a series of small functions, and that can help. But like, it cannot write actual code. It cannot write a program. It cannot write an app unless you actually already know what you want it to do, and you have to give it tons upon tons of detailed instructions. And the thing about code is not just about writing code. It's about testing code. It's about fixing all the problems. Like, 98% of coding is about literally fixing errors, and it can't do that. It can't figure out what mistake has been made, and it can't adapt code. So it's pretty much actually pretty useless, I think. So there's a bunch of different ones out there, and Microsoft, GitHub's their whole extra code helper, or whatever they call it. At the end of the day, I think they found it basically 7% improvement. Like, that was it in terms of, you know, all these great things for coders. It sped up their work by 7%, and that paper didn't even take into account of, like, how many errors and, like, that's going to cause, and how many people are going to make mistakes that are going to cost companies, I don't know, how many billions, trillions, and stuff like that. So, like, I am very much down on it. And, like, I think there's a lot of hype saying things like 90% of – they could do, like, 90% of coding. No, like, field testing, it slightly helps people who already know how to code. But, like, an average person is not going to be able to write an app by using any of these programs.
All right, Doug, time for comments on that, because I'm not sure – well, I agree with you right now, right? But what we're really talking about here, and the whole point of machine learning, is that it learns faster than anything else can, right? Because it takes in so many different sources. It learns when we tell it, nope, that's wrong, try this one, and then you get it right, then it learns that, right? It learns preferences. It learns that – that human element that it needs to have to be real, to do good UI UX design, right? And it needs to do that stuff. But there's, you know, when you're talking about coding, I mean, most developers, right? They don't even, they code those little special things, and they put the big blocks together. But I know plenty of developers that just have a code library. They say, I need to do this thing, so I'm going to take this chunk and I'm going to drop it right here and then modify it for my own purposes, right? So they're already doing a sort of plug and play sort of thing for the most part until it gets really technical. And then they're doing the fine details and stuff like that. But there's no reason why an AI or some sort of intelligence or automated program in one way or another can't do that. There's programs out there right now that if you want an app for your event or something like that, it's plug and play. You just plug in the details and all of a sudden you have an app that you can actually download from the App Store for your event, and you didn't code anything, right? And that's just a human doing that. If I can just tell a computer, here's my event, here's the kind of things I want to do, here's the schedule, build me an app, that I think we're there, right? It wouldn't be super awesome. It's not going to win app of the year, but it's there. But the point is, in 5 years, 6, 7, 8 years, 10 years, it is going to be there. And you're going to be able to say, hey, I want an app to be able to do this. Is that possible? And the thing's going to say, nope, it's not possible right now. Or yes, it is. Here it is. Done. Bam. There you go. Nobody's going to be selling and creating apps anymore at a certain point in time. I fully believe that. I'm not like all for the robot revolution, you know, the Android revolution, but I'm just a realist. Things get smarter and faster exponentially. And the more data we give it, and we're giving it the data of the world, you know, all these things are connected to the internet. So we're giving it everyone's data, everyone's thoughts, everyone's feelings, everyone's Facebook posts and tweets and all that stuff. It might end up being a total moron if it's reading Twitter, but that being said, you know, it's smart as what we feed it, and we're feeding it literally everything.
You know, we're talking about things as they are, you know, they're going to be in the future and everything and how they are right now. But I still think that there's a pathway for a company or a series of companies or a state historic preservation office to seriously find some kind of a way to use the database of things that they have to automate and really crank things out. And, you know, one thing that I'm really thinking here is, the state of Washington has all their site files and everything online. And if you've registered your, you know, background and everything, you pass the test, you're a professional archaeologist and you have access to that website, you can put your GIS polygons into that and show the project area, and then have it project where all the sites and all the previous projects are within, you know, 1 mile or whatever. Mm-hmm. And many of those records, especially if they've been written in the last, you know, 30 years or so, they're already PDFs or digital files that you can then click on the reports that are relevant reports and get all those. So, I mean, I think everybody can see where I'm going with this. If you had a long pipeline, or you had some building in downtown Tacoma or something like that, and there was all these historic properties, one super easy thing to do would be to just aggregate all those reports and everything together, and then have some kind of ChatGPT software scrape those reports that are within that boundaries. Like, we keep talking about the writing thing. ChatGPT is just out in the open internet ocean, like trying to create things. And, you know, like Doug was commenting, it makes its own citations up, and we don't actually really know all the places that it's getting all the knowledge that it's got. And so it's a good place for students or other folks to start off at that point and use that as the knowledge. But what if it did just go ahead and tell you what reports it was getting it from, where it's getting this culture history, where it's getting that summary of all the, you know, previous projects, where it's getting that summary of, you know, relevant sites, even creating tables and breaking them down by, you know, year. That's the kind of stuff a lot of times that we have field techs or early career, you know, MA graduates or folks that are really starting off. They're the ones who read all those reports, and they create all those tables and make those historical contexts and backgrounds and all those different things. You know, I'm concerned about that being an absolute possibility, especially since I was at the SAA and I saw that there's one company that has just grown to cover like all of the West and the Midwest. And they're the biggest company in CRM that we've ever seen, you know, and it's a company that's always thinking about tech, specifically how can they reduce labor with tech. They've been at the front of recording things on tablets and finding different kinds of ways to synchronize the recordation of things in the field with folks back at home. I can see how this would just be yet another tool that would then create a situation where there's like perpetual techs who never learn how to do those tables and that entry-level writing, perpetual crew chiefs who never learn how to do the writing and never learn how to move up to PI. And then PI is like, what are they good for when you can just have ChatGPT write the next scope of work and contract and all that stuff?
So one of my favorite sort of like fun statistics is that in the UK, 10 years ago, there were more automatic car washes than there are today. As in, we're going backwards and hiring more people to do car washing. Car washers, people are taking the jobs of machines at the moment. And it's true. It's like, so everyone's talking about all these amazing things that could happen. But then, like, when you break it down, machine learning is not cheap. And, like, there's this idea that, like, somehow it might eventually become cheap. But honestly, like, what's probably going to happen is it's going to hurt people's wages, but we're still going to have people do things because it'll still be cheaper to have a person do something than to spend, you know, the millions it requires to go through. And it's probably going to have like a minimal effect. So like, we're talking like, there are already websites. So what you're discussing, Bill, about like uploading all of the field reports and then getting a field report back, there's already a site that does that for like grant writing for, you know, if you're a nonprofit, or I guess if anyone who wants to do any sort of grant writing, like you upload a bunch of its grants and then it'll spew back a bunch of boilerplate for you. But like, the problem is like, it's only as good as the data you're putting in there. And so like, you're gonna have a limited number of reports, and like, things change. So like, you know, if you put in all the reports, you're gonna get things talking about like, you know, the Navajo savages. And like, I wish I was joking or kidding, but like, yeah, there's reports from the 1950s, like archaeological and anthropology reports, that like, I'm just like, oh my God, it's like 1950s Disney racist level, yeah, of like stuff. And like, and we're constantly changing. So sorry guys, this is gonna be like a little sci-fi, but like, you know, depending on like what time traveling sci-fi TV show or movie you're watching, there's like a theory that basically you can't go back further than the furthest you've gone back with time travel, because then you start to create paradoxes. And potentially we might, like, all this machine learning might end at 2022. Like, as people start to use it to like populate websites and stuff, because you can look up and see what they used, and basically 80-some percent of it is the internet. Like, it was the top links on Reddit, and then a search engine that crawled a bunch of the web. It's most everything. Wikipedia is like 2%, and then there's like two databases of books that are like at 8% or something. But almost all of it's the internet. But as soon as people start using this and putting it out there, it's going to become circular, and it's just basically going to destroy everything. So, like, honestly, as it's currently put together, the machine learning that everyone's really like in awe about, one is I would call it more of a parlor trick than anything else. But two, it's like it might be broken. Like, it may be able to give you an answer as long as that answer is before 2022, because after that, the internet's going to be flooded with all these machine learning. And it is. It's going to be like people are going to plug it in to mass produce websites, and then they're just not going to know what is right or what is just random, good sounding things, but completely factually incorrect. I think what we're talking about is like, and this is not to sneeze at, but like when we're talking about like improving work, we're talking like, all right, so a report. We think a report is a lot of work, but actually if you do the budget, like the actual write-up of the report, the part that like you could put into chat, you know, whatever, or the Bard, or, you know, whoever's AI you have, that part of actually doing the report is minuscule. It's actually like going out, doing the excavation, doing the survey, you know, actually putting that into a data that the machine could then read off. Like, that's where all the work comes in. That, like, we're talking like such a minor bit of our work that might be slightly improved, that I think it's going to be a huge deal. But in the end, I suspect possibly wages might not go up that much because it'll be held down, but that we're still going to have about the same amount of people doing the work, and we'll probably be taking some jobs from machines soon.
I think, man, I really just don't believe any of this that you're saying, Doug. I think you're completely way off base, and I'll tell you why. Because history tells us technology, engineering, everything goes through growing pains, right? There's always, you know, missteps, and there's always, you know, paths we went down that maybe we shouldn't have gone down, and then people realize that, or they don't, and then another path goes down. There's enough people doing this, there's enough companies trying to figure these things out, that, you know, somebody's going to get it what we'll call right for now, which may not be right, right? And we're going to go on down the line. But I'm trying to think way further down the line. Like, who cares if some sort of machine learning algorithm is writing your site reports right now? I'm envisioning a future where we don't need stupid site reports. All we care about is the data and the analysis of the data and the trends and what that tells us about history. Site reports are stupid and nobody reads them. We've said that so many times over and over again. There are millions of site reports sitting in offices of state historic preservation societies and BLM offices and Forest Service offices and all over the place that literally nobody's ever read and nobody's ever going to read
them. That's my bedtime reading.
No, but you don't even read the whole thing. You read the executive summary, or you read the conclusions like everybody else does, and nobody gets in and reads.
I look at the pictures too, the map, the pictures. I do that.
Exactly.
Phil likes a good picture book.
I know. That's my point, though, is that it's just like, do we even need that? I'm looking towards a future where the humans are allowed to do the high level thinking and the really the big picture kind of stuff that is really going to be difficult for machine learning. I'm not going to say impossible, but it's going to be difficult for computer programs to be able to do that, right, for a really long time. Again, I think they're going to get there. And then really, what are we for? But that's a question for hopefully a long time from now. But anyway, let's take our last break, and then we'll come back and argue about this on the other side.
No, I have one thing to say, and that's okay. This that there is no future, Chris. According to Doug, Skynet achieves consciousness in 2022. Wake up.
Right. All right. With that, we'll see you on the other side. All right, welcome back to the CRMR podcast, episode 262. And I don't know, I just ended my little rant at the end of the last segment, so I don't know who's up now. Bill?
Well, you know, the thing I want to talk about is folks who do have the belief, right? Like, you know, we're talking about all these different kinds of scenarios where reports are writing themselves, or, you know, clients can just pay one of us to give our certifications to the state and then click in and just get a map of every single site and every single thing that's nearby. And then they don't really need, you know, they just need us to go out there and check. And then Doug's mentioning probably the most pragmatic and probable approach that humans are cheaper than software and we'll just continue using humans either until they break or just stop doing the job. I mean, that's kind of where CRMs are at right now, where we can't find humans who will work for the low enough wages. And so now they're telling me that I need to train more people because they broke them all and didn't pay them. But the, you know, I'd like to ask the question of what about all the folks who are trying to make it work, right? So what about all the folks that do believe that their essay is good, that they've conjured out of the internet? Or what about the companies that do think this is a passable report in actual archaeological science because they just cut and paste it? I mean, we've covered boilerplate before on this show, you know, and folks who don't know, companies don't write all their reports. They just cut and paste sentences and paragraphs and sometimes entire sections from previous reports. And they only update them based on like what few articles that person has had time to read or other things that they've figured out from other sites. But in general, it's really all just kind of cut and pasted. And that's going from their compliance reports to the proposals to your contract that you got hired, if you even signed one. I mean, all that stuff the company already has. So, you know, if someone can use the computer and save 7% more, I can see how that would be a thing. But, you know, what do we do about folks who believe that this is the future and start raking the internet and this is just what they're doing? This is how they're doing archaeology.
I mean, not for archaeology, but we're already seeing it in pseudo-archaeology. Like, literally just the other day, someone did a whole thread on Twitter about how basically – you guys probably have seen these, but there'll be like accounts where people will basically just choose a topic, pump out a bunch of stuff that's basically tailored to that social media platform, get hundreds of thousands of followers, and then basically sell on the account. And they usually, if it has to do with like archaeology, it usually ends up being like a lot of aliens, a lot of Atlantis, but that's because that's what sells and stuff. And so it just ends up being pretty shit. But you're already seeing that where basically people have started to create like Facebook groups or, you know, pages and stuff, and they're pumping out an incredible amount of fake crap. Like, they're just making up images. They're just complete bonkers. And people are just absolutely eating it up because you can make some pretty crazy generated photos there that I think they still look like basically Photoshop crap. But I honestly have seen things in the past where it's like incredibly obvious that it's Photoshopped. And people would be like, no, it's real. I'm like, dude, the shadows aren't even like in the same direction. Like, you could tell that it's Photoshopped just off of that. Also, it looks like the wrong pixels, the wrong colors. It's just so obvious, but like people can't see it. And you're already seeing this deluge of crap out there. And this is what I'm thinking, like, a lot of it's probably going to be more negative than positive. So yeah, maybe we shave off like 0.05% of our budget by being a little quicker on writing our reports. But honestly, like, unless you're having someone check that report, it's going to be crap. It's going to be the same thing. We're just going to put out a lot more crap instead of quality. And I think it's going to be the same. Like, I mean, now it's obviously the examples I've just given are people who are out there to make money and, you know, do a poor job. I don't think a lot of archaeologists are out there to do that. But I don't see this going anywhere well. And this goes back to Chris's thing. I agree with Chris that, like, actually, honestly, we probably don't need a lot of reports. Like, a lot of our reports is we basically take the data and then we put it into somewhat of a narrative, but it's really one of the most, okay, I think I'm not going to insult anyone with this, but like, it's really boring. it's like, oh, and then we dug, you know, 10 centimeters down, and then we dug another 10 centimeters down, and then we dug another 10 centimeters down, and like I've gone through reports and like trying to make a report sound halfway not repetitive, not boring is a bit brutal, but it's because we're just putting data and trying to add like a narrative to what is that. I agree, like, we could, there are better ways to do things. I just don't see this machine learning being able to do, like, honestly, getting rid of reports is something we could do without machine learning. I think we should. Well, reports in the sense of we have these big narrative things where we could just put the data there. I think, you know, there are better ways of doing it now without machine learning. I just see machine learning helping us keep putting out the same old things that are not the highest quality. I think it could probably be a crutch It'll keep us doing the wrong things instead of the right things.
Well, and, you know, I agree with a lot of what you said. Some of those structures on the repetitiveness are because, you know, the State Historic Preservation Office and the, you know, advisory council, we have to have X amount of sections in a report. Like, they have to have these sections, and every SHPO is telling you the report guidelines, and we're trying to make it interesting. You're right. But I mean, walking next to your buddy 30 feet apart across the forest and digging a hole every, you know, 30 feet or, you know, 90 feet, that's how creative do you really make that? But I'm kind of concerned with some of the stuff, like what Chris was saying. How many of our clients think that just doing this is good enough, right? Like, how many of our clients think that just scraping the database and getting a map and making some tables is good enough? And in that case, they really only need like one RPA, right? Because they can just, you know, scrape and do the class one and be like, oh, heck, I guess we do actually have to do probes. Oh, never mind. Let's just change the project area. And so now that site's nowhere near there. Therefore, nothing's done. And, you know, we can just do some kind of windshield survey. I mean, how many of our clients could possibly get savvy and think that just making crap and putting it out there with a map and some tables is good enough?
I mean, you kind of say it like that doesn't already happen.
Well, I mean, with me, Doug, it does not ever happen in my office. No, seriously, I was fortunate enough to work with folks who valued the quality of the writing, and they were like, this is all the archaeology we get to do, so let's make it good. And so they did want us to learn how to write, and they didn't want us to scrape and do crap. And even the boilerplate, they were like, well, don't just assume straight up that something that was written 15 years ago about this town, you still have to go to the library. You still have to find resources and try to figure things out. Like, we can't just only accept this as what's going on. And so, you know, I came through several companies that was, they did want it to be better, and they didn't want us to do something like ChatGPT.
I think that's the thing, is like, it's amazing how much good archaeology that happens. Okay, my wording here is going to be a bit iffy, and I realize someone's going to rip me a new one in the comments, but like, we do a lot of good archaeology that technically we don't have to do. And that's because like, most people that go into archaeology want to do good archaeology. So like, if you look at like all the regulations across almost like every country, and like, if people follow just to the letter of the law, and some people do, and you get some real crap out there, but like, if we did it, it would all be real crap. It's amazing, like, legally, like, yeah, okay, some SHPOs will come back, or in the UK, you know, council archaeologists, and they'll be like, actually, we need better, you know, higher quality, this, this, and this. But honestly, like, if push came to shove and you sued them, they would have to back down. A lot of archaeology is basically done because we want to do good archaeology.
I fully agree with what you were just saying, Doug, that this thing really does, you know, continue and keep itself alive, because there's a lot of folks who really do care about archaeology. And that's why things aren't just absolute trash at every single place, because the folks that are doing it, they really want to do archaeology. I saw a thing online, you know, we've been talking this podcast for a long time. And like, my advice to folks who want to do archaeology is, don't consider this your only career. You're going to do this until you decide to do something different. And we've even interviewed people who switched careers. But I saw, a thing online, someone talking to a couple of folks who did leave archaeology, and how they were saying, yeah, they have something that, you know, pays the bills and gives them benefit, but they really miss being in the field and doing archaeology. And so I really think the folks who are in here, they care about it. And, you know, we're really putting in more than just, you know, money and effort into this. This is our dream. Like, this is, we're putting a lot of, you know, energy that we really care about that you don't always find in all careers. And that's the only thing that keeps it from being, you know, Skynet. So there's no way to really calculate. There's no way to quantify that. And you can't capture that in a software. And there's no AI that's going to cover someone who's wanted to be an archaeologist from the time they were 7 years old and finally gets to do it.
Yeah, you guys are right. Here's what I'm going to say to kind of finish out this discussion, right, guys? I think we need to just look to the future and say, what do we want it to look like, right? And we need to use these new tools. We need to use these new tools. Let me emphasize that part, because if we don't, it's just going to be like, archaeology is always, you know, 15, 20 years behind technologically, right? We need to acknowledge the fact that new things are coming down the line in a way to do things. And again, I'll go back to what I said either in the beginning of segment two, the end of segment one. What is the output? What are we trying to learn here, right? We're trying to learn more about how past societies you know, thought, behaved, interacted with their environment, you know, what they were thinking, what they were feeling. We're trying to learn all those sorts of things. And that's really the only thing that we're trying to figure out. OK, archaeology is just one tool that helps us do that. But there's all kinds of other things that we use, from, you know, geological resources to, you know, other technologies in our excavation and things like that, where we can analyze different facets of the environment, from pollen to, you know, different chemicals in the ground and things like that, to help us understand how our ancestors and everybody else's ancestors and maybe somebody who is just back there and doesn't have any descendants, you know, how they interacted with the world. And that's the output. Who cares how we get there? You know what I mean? Who cares if it's, you know, we're entering all this information into a machine learning algorithm because it can do it quicker and see all the connections that we can't see and spit something out that we can interpret and see how it looks. I think we'd be foolish not to at least try that sort of technology as it gets better and better and better and see what kind of output it gives us.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to go back. I'm going to say, like, we should be a bit more Amish. And that's to say, like, so everyone sort of thinks of, like, the Amish with the buggies and that they, like, give up all technology. And that's not true. And it depends on different groups and different families and stuff like that. They go through a process where they literally evaluate new technology. So all new technology that comes out, the Amish have actually tried. They try cell phones, they try everything, and they evaluate it on the process of, does it bring them closer to God or further away from God? And I think that's a good approach that people should take with all technology, is does it bring you closer to what you want to get? And if that's understanding the past, and that's great. Or if it takes you further away, then obviously that's a negative. And I just sure. don't see the way it's designed. So, like, all those, like, the chat and the Bard, they are not actually, again, this goes back to, they're not artificial intelligence, they're machine learning, and all they're good at is guessing the next word. They're specifically designed, and it's how they're engineered, is they basically guess the next word, and they guess it really well, so it sounds like human speech, but there's nothing there. So I don't see that being a tool that's going to very much help us, or if it does, it's going to be such a marginal bit that, like, honestly, like, a bigger deal would be, like, if you're going to lose more money if one of your vehicles breaks down and you can't get out to site for, like, 2 days or something. Like, that's going to cost you more to a project than the marginal gains we're going to get out of these sort of machine learning writing things. I honestly think the damage it's going to do is going to be so much worse. Like, the internet right now is kind of a dumpster fire in terms of trying to get a hold of stuff. But, man, once all the spammers just basically turn sites into nothing but gibberish, right now it's nearly impossible to fight pseudo-archaeology because there's just so much of that crap out there. But that's nothing. That's like a drop, a pin in the ocean. It's not completely impossible. Andrew, it's going to be impossible after this, because basically people are going to create so many sites that, like, your anything on Google, the first 4,000 are going to be just gibberish.
That's true. And you know what that does? Gives me employment for the next century. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. See? Nice. Andrew's taking the jobs of robots.
The last thing I'd like to say to people who, you know, students who are looking to a robot to write your essay, you're not learning how to write. And the number one thing that employers are looking for is people who know how to write. And if you learn how to write with ChatGPT, you better hope that the next company wants you to do the same thing there, because as we're finding out, it's pretty unlikely the next company is going to have you use ChatGPT, and you're instead going to have to use your brain and experience. So if you use the software to get through, yeah, you might make it through college, because, I mean, you pay up front for college. Like, I get paid either way, whether you learn or not. It doesn't matter. But if you're trying to rely on that tool or crutch or whatever you want to call it to make it through a career where you have to write every day, good luck, my friends. Good luck with that.
Okay, well, we're wrapping this up, and I just want to comment one more thing on both what you, Bill, and Doug just said. I don't think any of us are really talking about this being a tool right now, right? It's still, I mean, in the last year, this thing has really exploded, especially ChatGPT. It's really exploded onto the, you know, the consciousness of the everyday person, right? I mean, they've been working on these kinds of things for a little while now, but it's really just come on so that we are talking about this on the Sierra Mark podcast. But I'm talking about, you know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, it's going to get better. That's how those things go. It's going to get better. And whether or not we should even use it then is a is an ethical question that we need to ask ourselves, right? I don't know if the answer to that is yes or not, but we won't know until we get there, you know?
I know, Chris. Like, we were supposed to have self-driving cars in 2014, and right. there has been no improvement in a decade. Like we're assuming that it's going to get better, but it could be alchemy. Like, literally, there is nothing that alchemy is never going to be anything because it can't be anything. You're saying that this might be something, but it may never, like what we're talking about here, the machine learning on these things, it can't do anything but make up references because that's how it's designed. Like, I don't think you're right going to see much improvement.
Okay. Well, that's highly unlikely, right? Because that's not how computers are designed. I mean, computers get better exponentially, and that's just how it is, right? Look at the phone that's in your hand today or the computer you're sitting in front of versus the one you had 10 years ago, right? They get better. And cars are not a great example either, because cars are not able to evolve because of infrastructure and regulation, not because of a lack of will and technology. I mean, there's plenty of car manufacturers out there right now that can put self-driving cars on the road, but they're not. And there are some actually in California, but there are not doing that because of the will of the people and regulatory guidelines that are preventing it. And then, you know, different cities not wanting it to happen and the infrastructure not being there for it to actually work. That's nothing to do with technology, right? Absolutely nothing. So,
well, no, but that's, I don't know, just that technology hasn't improved. Like, so also, like, you've just said computers get better. No, the transistors, we double on transistors every 18 months.
What's the difference?
Well, one, the difference? Is one's a physical of what they can do. The other is actually the algorithm that you put into it. So you can, like, you can crunch bigger and bigger numbers, but if you're not crunching those numbers correctly, it doesn't matter. Like you could crunch, like, and that's the thing with self-driving cars, is it's not, you say it's regulatory, but it's actually, the problem is it's the edge cases. And it's always been the edge cases of when sure. something goes wrong, who's responsible for the money, who's going to pay the insurance, who's right. going to pay for the person who dies.
That's regulatory.
Yes, but it's always been there, and it's never going to disappear. And the self-driving cars have never got to the point where they're going to be able to overcome that hurdle. Even though you get more and more better and better computer chips in the cars, that's not going to affect it, because there's physical problems with edge cases that it just can't, it'll never be able to understand. And that's the thing with this.
Important. This is very important. While you guys yammer on, I've built a bunker and I've had my daughter do many, many sit-ups. So I am ready for the end times.
Right. All right, guys, we are way over time on this segment and this podcast, so I'm going to end it right there. But if you're listening to this, I want to hear your thoughts on this. You know, if you're over on Facebook or you know, our website, actually, you can actually comment on the blog post. Well, they're actually kind of blog posts as far as format goes, but you can comment on the podcast show notes page right at arcpodnet.com/CRM archaeology. Okay. And feel free to email us at any one of our contact information or Twitter or whatever we have listed on the website. Okay. So we want to hear your thoughts and opinions on this and where CRM is going in the future with all this AI and machine learning, or maybe it's going absolutely nowhere and Doug is right, but I doubt it. All right. With that, we'll see you guys later. That's it for another episode of the CRM Archaeology Podcast. Links to some of the items mentioned on the show are in the show notes for this podcast, which can be found at www.arcpodnet.com/CRM Arc Podcast. Please comment and share anywhere you see the show. If you'd like us to answer a question on a future episode, email us. Use the contact form on the website or just email chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. Support the show and the network at arcpodnet.com/members. Get some swag and extra content while you're there. Send us show suggestions and interview suggestions. We want this to be a resource for field technicians everywhere, and we want to know what you want to know about. Thanks to everyone for joining me this week. Thanks also to the listeners for tuning in, and we'll see you in the field. Goodbye.
Chris, hold on. I need to go chat GT. I need to put in and have them do my outro for me real quick. If you could just hold on 1 second.
Oh, my God.
It's going to tell me how much time I have and how I should do the most perfect outro that will both annoy Chris and keep a tradition going.
I think this is it.
You did it. You don't need ChatGPT. This is it.
Oh, okay. My God. In that case, goodbye.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Jesus won't save you, Chris. Jesus won't save you from me.
Oh, my God.
This episode was produced by Chris Webster from his RV traveling the United States, Tristan Boyle in Scotland, DigTech LLC, Cultural Media, and the Archaeology Podcast Network, and was edited by Chris Webster.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.